Susie?
Yes, they are.
Do you have the minutes?
In there, in the blue folder.
That's blue.
Inside the blue folder, inside the blue folder.
I just wanted to write, sure.
That was in the briefing.
Good morning, everyone. We're glad everyone's here. This is collective bargaining between the University of Central Florida Board of Trustees and the United Faculty of Florida chapter at the University of Central Florida. It is September 25th, 2018. And I have for everyone's review a copy of the collective bargaining session minutes from August 23rd, 2018. I think I did that without a mistake.
Off to a good start.
Thanks, Mike.
Here are extra copies for whoever we are.
Okay, nice.
Okay, thank you, John. So the minutes, Charlie, are
no objections.
Approved without anyone's suggested changes. John, it looks like you have a lot. We have something, we have a lot today, too. So I don't care who goes first.
Why don't you go ahead and go first?
All right. Well, I know that we are all, we have something that's going to be kind of a different approach and maybe a little bit experimental. But we know that all of us are anxious to get to a contract and to resolve our differences. So what we thought we might do is kind of sweep through the entire contract and create an entire document. So that's what we've done today. And I'm going to give it to you, and I have it in a different, couple different formats. So I have it like a clean copy, and I have like a formatted copy. But I wanted, before I gave it to you, because you know, whenever we exchange paper, people immediately start reading the paper, and they're not talking to each other. And I wanted to. One of the things we did with this is carrying on along the theme of like means testing, what articles we need to have in this contract. I know that you have pointed out to us very early on that we thought the preamble was unnecessary. I kind of thought the preamble was okay because of the reference to what falls within the basket of the Senate or falls within the basket of collective bargaining, but still, that is what it is. You know, that we don't really need to lay all that out in language in our collective bargaining agreement and make this document as burdensome as it is. So that's carrying on that theme. There's going to be several articles that we think are unnecessary. And we think we can streamline the contract by suggesting that we leave them out. All of us have built the contract that we currently have on the on the foundation of the contract that we inherited from the Board of Regents. We can all take pride in saying none of us were involved in getting that contract.
I'll second that statement publicly.
We often find ourselves either at the bargaining table or in a grievance, scratching our heads, saying, why is this here and what does it mean? So I just wanted to, I want to verbalize this and say, track through it, and then I'll give you the paper if you don't mind.
Sure.
So, preamble, you say, is unnecessary. We agree that it's unnecessary. Article 1, which is recognition, we think is unnecessary, because Article 1 exists in... All Article 1 does is say is that there is a document that has been issued by the Public Employees Relations Commission that defines the bargaining unit, and that is true. And that's a legal reality. There's a document out there. There's no reason for us to have to repeat it. We think consultation can be vacated because we think that it's probably a better system that we talk to one another whenever we need to talk to one another and not to have that formalization. The UFF privileges, which is 3, we think needs to be in the contract, and we both have language on the table for 3. 4 is management rights. We're willing to vacate management rights from the contract. We think management rights exists in law, and there's no reason to try to muddy it up with some language in the contract. Academic freedom, which is 5, we've reached agreement on. Article 6, which is discrimination, I think we've reached agreement on with the exception of whether to add the parental status situation. Article 7 we think is unnecessary for the contract because everything that I think is contained in Article 7 is a public record that is subject to disclosure upon request. And that could even be a standing request. Articles 8, 9, 10. Let me not go too fast. Articles 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 17 we think should be in the contract. And that's...
I'm sorry, Mike, what are those numbers again?
8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 17. And just, I know that there are some people who are observing today for their purposes so that they understand what I just said. 8 is appointment. 9 is assignment of responsibility. 10 is performance evaluation. 12 is non-reappointment. 13 is layoff. 14 is promotion. 15 is tenure. We'd also include 16, which is discipline, and 17, which is leaves. 18.
So 16.
16 and 17. Add 16. 17. I didn't mean to skip 16.
Okay.
11, which is evaluation file, we've reached agreement. 19, which is conflict of interest, we've reached agreement. So now we're up as far as 19.
So
yes, John.
You do not propose to include 18.
18 is, we have not given you an 18 yet.
Oh.
We're including 18, but we're giving it to you today.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. 20 is the grievance article. We think that obviously has to be in the collective bargaining agreement. As a matter of fact, law requires that's the only article that has to be in the contract because the statute says there shall be a grievance article. Where we're apart on that is the race judicata, multiple forms issue, I think. We want to retain the current language, and I think you want to strike that language. 21, we think, is unnecessary because the information referenced in there is statute, with the exception of copies of the contract, which we think might be time for us to do an online version anyway and let people download it if they want to download it. So, you know, we could put that someplace. That's not going to be 22 sabbaticals, 23 salaries, 24 benefits. We would all have retained, you know, we'd still have in the contract. 25 is UFF insurance deductions. We've reached an agreement on that. Quite frankly, 26 on payroll deduction, I think payroll deduction is in the statute. How we have an obligation to do a payroll deduction for the UFF based upon your certification as of the time that you give us a card that authorizes that deduction for that person. You set the amount by statute. We don't set the amount. We don't negotiate the amount. In the statute, it says how someone goes about revoking that. If they want to stop paying dues, they have to give 30 days written notice. So we probably could rely, if we wanted to really streamline this, that's an area where we could ask ourselves, why do we need anything more in the contract than what's in statute? But that's something, you know, that, you know, I'm not dictating any of this to you. I'm just bringing these things up for your consideration. Okay. Maintenance of benefits. I don't think maintenance of benefits is required because, quite frankly, that's the law too. I mean, the collective bargaining agreement controls. We're not allowed to go and cut an individual deal with a person in the bargaining unit. That's direct dealing. So we can't go to anybody and cut a deal on a separate contract that's different than the collective bargaining agreement. So we don't know if that's necessary. 28 we'd have in. I think that the question on 28 is just whether or not it's grievable. We would have status quo. 29, severability is unnecessary, actually. It's boilerplate language, but I don't think it's necessary. If one of our provisions of this contract happened to be rendered invalid by law, we're not throwing the whole contract out, which is all that does. It just says if one portion becomes invalid, the whole contract isn't invalidated. We could leave it in, but I think it's unnecessary. And the same thing is, that's 29. Amendment duration we have to have in the contract because we have to have a duration. And then totality of agreement, we would have, I guess you're merging it with amendment and duration, and we're status quo, but that can be merged or not merged. You know, that's, I think our language, I think that's just a little language tweak there. So, now.
Well, this is interesting because we actually thought of the same thing, assembling everything and just giving you the whole thing. So that's not actually surprising.
Okay, good.
We were of the same mind, and we just thought we're so close, let's just, we have one more thing to give you, and that was basically it.
Yeah, so that's, this is what it would look like. Clean. This is a clean
version. Oh, this is clean, okay.
Yeah.
Trees are dying today.
Mike, do you have any thoughts on Article 32, definitions?
Well, definitions, I think, has to be in there. The only thing that might come out of the definitions is if we were defining a term and it only existed in an article that was being vacated, it would probably be unnecessary to define it. So we might amend definitions for that purpose. But actually, I think that most of our definitions are so global. You know, they're like who the parties are, what we mean when we say the word days. I don't think we need to do a lot in definitions. I think that can roll forward. But clearly, you're right, Lee. I should have said that's an article that's we need to retain. In my
view. There's one new definition.
Okay, so we have. All right, now. Ooh. Here is I didn't keep a copy of 18 for myself. This is 18. That's okay.
Sorry, Mike. Did you have a copy of this with the changes track?
Yeah. I'll get that to you in just a second. But I just kind of circling around because I did mention that 18. This is 18. A lot of work has gone into 18 from our research capacity. In operation. I think we probably need to have Sherry in
we'll wait for
that.
Sherry. Yeah.
Because Sherry was the one who did point on this. But I just wanted to, you know, I'm trying to work through this as it's 18 that's new. And let's see. This is what it would look like with track changes.
Ah. And so are there any changes to other articles in here that we haven't seen already, aside from 18?
There's a couple. Charlie, can you...
I don't have a list. I'm sorry.
There would be a couple changes, and they're going... What we'll do is we will get you a list, John.
Okay.
Of any changes, but there have been some tweaks to this, right, Charlotte?
What you have is track from status quo, so that's what you need to know anyway, I suppose. But yes.
Ah, okay. So these are changes track from status quo.
Yeah.
But they may include updates from the last.
From the last iteration of a proposal that we gave you during the previous session.
I'm sorry. They definitely did.
Yes.
There's a chair over there if you'd like
to
sit. Oh, I have successfully passed all the paper that I can bother with. I have depapered myself.
Do you have an idea when you might be able to get us the list of where the changes are?
Sure.
So I'm going to have to go back to all the last proposals, assemble, and then do a thing. But, yeah, I can do it. Do you want to give me a couple hours right now? I didn't have enough time to do it. I was able to do it from status quo because I was able to prepare that much in advance, but I didn't have enough time to go back to every last proposal.
Well, but I'm sure.
Give a highlight reel?
Yeah.
I'm sure you're talking about football.
Yeah. I'm sure that we all, Charlie, appreciate the undertaking of assembling all this. But John was just wanted to know, like, I don't think he meant like this minute, but he was wondering when in the course of our negotiations he could have it. I think. like a days.
I don't know. It depends on what else I have going on, but I can. I'll get to it as soon as I can. If it's something, can I email it then? I think so. Right.
Yeah, you can email it.
All right.
All right. And then we're going to wait for Sherry to go over 18.
Oh, okay.
Because she, like I said, she did the point work on that.
All right.
So there you go. What do you think? Interesting, huh?
Yes, it's interesting. We probably should have talked more in the very beginning of this whole process. Because we had, as I mentioned, we had the same inclination, which was to package everything together. So at least on that, we were had the same ideas. And, you know, obviously there's some parts like the preamble that we now obviously agree on. And severability.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to put yourself out of work, Mike.
That's my goal.
Well, good. That's my goal, too. If we get a contract that we can agree on and that allows the place to function in an orderly and predictable and fair manner, then we'll be all set.
Good.
All right. So we just have a couple of things for you. And this was on your list of, on the good list. So Article 19, and we've got, let's see. We've got some color copies for folks, and then it turns out that with the highlighting, sometimes the black and whites are actually better. So you might want to, we have a whole pile of them here too, so you might want to take a black and white version as well.
Okay.
The blue highlighting looked right on the computer screen, and it printed terribly.
Good.
So this is Article 15, the tenure article, and it's UFF proposal number 2.
Ross is color or black and white. Whichever one makes the best.
Go with color. Actually, before we do this, can we take a caucus? We'd like to take a caucus.
Sure, sure.
Like 10 minutes.
Yes, we
sure.
Before I do that, I'm about to.
Okay.
Make sure I can get links for it.
At least mid-October.
So tired of this.
I always thought October would be was the time that snapped.
Yeah, I know. It used to be.
Yeah.
But
well, it
not
feels
anymore.
Like we're out of the wet season. Like
it's
starting to dry up a little bit. Usually that cools down.
All right, so whatever you want to do next, John. Sherry's here, so she can do 18 when you're ready for her to go through 18.
Okay, so why don't we do our 15 and then
sure,
okay.
That'd be
catch
great.
Your breath and doesn't have to go right on onto the hot seat here.
Good. Because we appreciate the time and caucus because we actually, I shouldn't say we actually, like we don't normally do it. We actually read it. But we did.
We appreciate the candor.
we actually read it. So okay.
Well, maybe then all I have to do is explain the color coding just to make sure that.
Well, no, go ahead, John. I think it would be helpful because I think we could be close on a lot of things on this.
Okay. Well, that was our hope as well. So this is our second proposal, and we track the changes from our first proposal. Anything that's in that light gray, if you've got the color copy, or the light gray on the black and white, was brought in from your second proposal. Mm-hmm. So that was language that we adopted. And then the blue are the changes that came from existing regulations. So it's how we deal with the tenure process right
See,
now anyway.
Is the blue, for those of us who have black and white, is that the dark
That's
gray?
That's the darker gray, right.
Yeah,
which
so
is actually, we can actually see
the
words
page.
Underneath the highlighting, as opposed to the color version.
Okay.
And in a couple of places, we made a few grammatical corrections to the regulations.
Okay.
And then the changes from our, the other changes from our previous version are just highlighted in yellow, and that's over on line 113, and again, it's just cleaning up language. And then the part 15.1 that looks like it's new material on lines 7 to 9, that was just moved up from the last, it used to be, it's the last section in the current one. So hopefully that was your understanding when you guys were reading it.
I have a couple questions, and then I think the team might have a couple questions. My questions are just questions of clarification. The first is, and I think I read it this way, is in 15.3, which is tenure decision, it allows for a faculty member who's tenured earning to...
I'm sorry, Mike, what line are you on?
I'm kind of on lines 20 through 26. I think I'm reading it the right way, and that is someone can go up as often as they elect. So somebody, let's say, for example, was in their going into their fourth year and they wanted to apply fourth, fifth, and sixth, they could do that. They could apply three times. Because there's no limit on the number of times a person can go up early. I mean, technically, I guess someone could go up every year.
I think you have to withdraw your application after the first try, though.
The usual procedure is that folks, that the tenure decision is final, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. It's one opportunity. So someone might, it's unusual for folks to go up early. I mean, we just had a case in biology where someone did that successfully because they were encouraged to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so normally when folks go up early, it's because they're encouraged to do it or they feel like the timing is right for them to do it. But it wasn't our intent to have it a multiple attempt.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Because we were just bringing the language in from
right. I was reading it kind of in conjunction with by the end of the 6 years of service. So I thought that meant you had up to through 6 years of service before you got notice that further employment will not be offered. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Those the things aren't. I think someone could read that as saying, I get up to 6 years before you can give me notice of no future employment, and I get to go up early, so I get to go up early multiple times. But if that's not your intent, I'm glad I asked the question.
Well, that's just capturing literally in the regulation the current language.
I guess I wasn't seeing that, so...
Yeah. No, I don't think we would normally... That would not be our normal procedure, but... Because I think you only get one shot at it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, you can withdraw.
Right.
And go up again. But if they make it, once a decision is made, that's it.
Okay, well we had that question in the caucus and we clarified that. The second.
Could we need to fix language?
I don't know.
I don't see that, so I'm missing.
Okay.
Miss
is it your intention that if someone goes up early, it would be in the fifth year? Is that?
Well, it depends, and so that's why.
But if they go up earlier than their fifth year, then they're out?
Well, that's the normal procedure.
They're out if a decision is actually made.
And it's negative.
Yeah, I mean, people sometimes go up and early and. They get negative votes all the way up, and then they realize this
they
is...
They withdraw.
They withdraw, yeah. And then they could go up again the next year.
Yeah, a lot of
or
times
the next,
the council to withdraw. I mean, if it's negative at the department level, then that's usually not a good sign.
Okay, and I realize this is migrated from somewhere else, but I don't think any of that's clear. I don't think it says in here that if you go up and you get to the point of a decision, then you get notice of no future employment. Because it says by the end of the 6 years, you're either awarded tenure or given notice. in B.
Unless there's an extension.
Oh, okay. I was looking at A.
I'm reading B and A together.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Is A is just establishing when folks go up. So it's usually in the sixth year, unless someone comes in mid-year, unless they go up early or they have credit upon hire, which is a relatively common, fairly common, or unless they voluntarily rescinded it, that credit. And then the caveat about extending it with permission from the university.
Right. I guess the clarification is, we know that if you do not have tenure by the end of the 6 years, you're given notice that future employment will not be offered.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't have companion language, or if you go up early and you're denied tenure. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Okay, now I see what you're saying. Now I understand.
I think that would be easily fixed by one sentence.
I think so too, but that was just something that came up in our focus.
We need to make that clear.
Yeah.
Because that's past practice here and
everywhere.
Practice everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of making that clear.
The only other thing that I have, and maybe Chuck or Ronnie or Sherry, Charlie has something else, is on line 53. There's language, I know it's migrated in, it's in blue, so it's migrated in from somewhere else that already exists. We were just curious. It says, if a college chooses to have criteria in addition to department or unit criteria, these criteria shall be approved by a majority of the full-time tenured employees in the college, the dean, and the provost or designee. I get that process. But how does a college go about making that decision? Like, is that like a vote of all a certain class of people in that college, or is it the dean of the college, or how does a college choose?
Yeah, the dean is separate, and so that's why we suggested separating the college, the faculty in the college, the dean, and the provost with a semicolon as opposed to a common.
Yeah.
It's not that they're all lumped together in one, and so the poor dean gets one vote.
Right.
So, among a pool of many, it's the dean has to approve it individually.
Right, but I guess I'm going back to the trigger step. Mm-hmm. We know how the criteria is approved, but how does a college go about making the determination that it wants additional criteria? Because it says if a college chooses, but I don't know how a college chooses. I don't know how they come to that choice. Is there a vote? Is there...
Well, there would be a... That's a good question.
I mean, you've got some colleges.
I think COS has criteria.
They may. I mean, but you've got some colleges that are relatively homogenous, and then you've got some that have very different types of units or departments in them, and you know, some department may say, I don't want college. You know, you get a college, the department like psychology, which is our largest, if they don't want it, biology does. Biology's out of luck in terms of a vote.
But is it more about the subject of the college choosing? That's a fuzzy term because a college isn't an individual?
How is that process? Because I don't know that. Well, the contract is silent on the process. But how does it go?
Yeah.
How does a group of people who are assembled as a college decide?
It's in the.
Because if we look down to line 73, so for instance, line 82. Of that, it says the procedures for creating and modifying tenure criteria identified in our previous promotion article. We've identified the steps for the creation and modification.
So we need to have that in conjunction with this to see what's going on in this.
And so,
yes.
Yeah. And so that's what I was thinking of is when normally when this is done, each department elects a representative to serve on a college-wide committee, and that's a college-wide committee that votes. So each department gets an equal weight in the vote. So okay. It's not done by the weighted average, which would be the individual yeah. faculty members.
Okay, yeah. Well, we can look at.
Okay,
we'll have to go back and look at 14.
Okay, on 14.
I think it was 14.3
as far. Okay. All right. Anything else? Anybody has anything else on the team? No?
No, we're just going to have to look at 14 in conjunction with this. Okay. We haven't looked at that in a while, so.
Well, and there was, I think in the status quo language, there's a lot of duplicative language. And so we,
yeah.
We don't want to probably merge those two sections because half our bargaining unit isn't involved in
tenure. Isn't involved in tenure, yeah.
But otherwise, that would be a normal thing to do. So we reference 14 and then
yeah.
we can get this even fewer trees.
Okay. Well, that's the questions I have on 15, thank you for indulging me.
So how do we want to move forward on producing tighter language for 15.3A, that section about the clock?
I think that's an easy fix.
Yeah.
I think we just need to say maybe...
Could we add a sentence to say D? An employee who does not withdraw 5 to 6 feet that is denied tenure is not eligible or gets a notice that further employment will not be offered. Draw some of the language from me.
It's not already in the interview to say by the end of 6 years or something equivalent. If you go up early, million times, you will get the notice.
Yeah, I think we could say by the end of the sixth year. Or if yeah. having applied earlier, but having received yeah. a final determination.
I think mm-hmm. the bigger issue is that we'll be more likely to have more faculty who have the tenure clock extended for various mm-hmm. reasons. So that 6 year of, okay, that's when a decision has to be made, that's where the caveat really is. That it could be no later than the 6 year unless, and then there's a whole bunch of things that could trigger the tenure clock being extended, military service and parental leave.
They probably, yeah, you're right.
Different leaves.
We probably need to put something in B that says, by the end of the 6 years of service, unless extended.
Yeah.
Dual loop tools is the next sort of drug, just a part of being considered for tenure. So after consideration for tenure, it's about an A. You'll get a note. The A is all about being considered for tenure and various positions that we can get for the director as
well. Well, let's just say this much. I think it can be fixed. I think we all agree on the same end result. So, mm-hmm.
All right. So why don't you bring language, and we'll okay. try to bring language, and
yeah, yeah.
whoever's
sure.
is
yeah.
the most clear and short.
Yes.
Works.
Good. All right. What do you want to do next, John? Ed, whenever you call on her, Sherry's going to go through 18.
Let's go through 18.
Okay.
Just take turns.
18 looks a lot different than it did before, and there are some real substantive changes to it. There are a lot of things that are the same. Most of the substantive changes are in the portion of the article that deals with copyright as opposed to inventions. It deals with works. Mm-hmm. And we start off with definitions. We expanded what we mean by instructional material, and we got away from that awkward division that we had before between, I don't have a copy of the old, but there was something like technical instructional material or whatever. We got away from that and we just said, this is what all, we tried to capture anything that we could possibly think of that would be related to instructional material. We did adopt I think your definition of distance or distributed learning. We added a section on work for hire on what that means and how it's defined in the copyright code. And we, I don't think we changed anything in the definition of invention. I don't think we added just some language in university support, which is in, do you have the color copy? Do they have color copies?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, in green. And that was just at the request of Tom Kavanaugh.
Does someone in the room know what those are?
Yeah.
I'm not feeling
yeah.
Okay.
The people yeah. in
the Double Jobo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even
yeah.
know how to pronounce it.
Maybe Obo Jobo
was
in the definition.
I could not tell
section.
You, but he did. See, he explained it to me at the time, and I understood it.
Obo Jobo is like a survey thing.
No, it's a Materia is a gaming engine, mm-hmm. gaming
yeah.
engine, and Obo Jobo is a learning object system.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, with those two, they're actually both open source right now.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So these are both open source.
Yeah.
So what we did next is, and we reorganized the way the article is structured to make it to it. It's structured more like the regulation now.
Mm-hmm.
So we just started out saying, okay, who has the rights to copyrighted work? And we went through works owned by the employees, basically, we didn't change, I mean, the language is pretty much the same until you get to four. And
I'm sorry, Sherry, where's four?
Four is line 73. And we have given copyright ownership of all instructional materials to the faculty. But we subject to an irrevocable, non-exclusive, royalty-free license to the university to use these as may be needed for research or educational purposes of the university. So you own it, but we have a right to use it. We have to, and a copy of the current instructional materials needs to be maintained in the department office so we know, you know, what it is. Works owned by the university, we basically assert copyright ownership in works for hire, with the exceptions noted above, which is most of everything. The works for hire, all of these you will see are things where the first two are works that were commissioned, expressly commissioned in writing by the university, they were assigned, the creator was assigned by the university to in writing to produce or participate. So these are not things that the university came up with on your own. If you were substantially assisted by a support agency, received assistance in the form of release time, or received university support, including contracts and grants administration for the creation of the work. But all of these, there has to be an agreement between the faculty and the administration. So we're not claiming works for hire status for anything that we have not specifically commissioned and have an agreement with you on. Except perhaps joint ownership, which we define as authorship which cannot be attributed to one or a discrete number of authors, but results from simultaneous or sequential contributions over time by multiple employees. It's not that joint ownership is not the determining factor. The determining factor is whether we can even determine who, because the authorship is so diffuse that we may not be able to tell who actually are the owners of this. Let's see, we did adopt your suggestion on transfer of copyright to the employee, that there may be situations where we own it, but we're willing to transfer it back to you. So we took your suggestion there. Inventions, and then we went into inventions, and we followed the same format, inventions owned by employees and inventions owned by the university. I don't believe that we made any substantive changes to inventions owned by the employee. And on inventions owned by the university, the only one substantive change there is in line 152 through 155, and this involves sponsored inventions where the sponsor may get a pre-negotiated license, ownership, or non-standard rights. Even in, these are inventions that that you engage in with an external party, and they have rights to those. Disclosure and university review, nothing has changed in that, and that's it. So it is more a change in structure than in substance, except for the fact that we have essentially given you ownership, copyright ownership, in all of your works, subject to a license for us to use them, mm-hmm. as we may need them. So I'm sure you'll want to spend some time looking at that. Because, as we know, this is the one article that gives everybody fits.
And for folks in the room, I'm nodding my head, which is saying yes, this is the one that gives us fits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's complicated. It's got a lot of legal. It's very law heavy.
And we also have to update it regularly because of changes yes. in technology and
the
law. Things in the law. Right?
Yeah.
So it's.
So Sherry, I have
sure.
a question. With lines 73, where you talk about it, structural materials,
mm-hmm.
and then when you go into line 79, where it says the creator was expressly commissioned, that's different. Is that different from
yes.
from like, okay, you're commissioned to teach this class?
Yes.
Okay, so those two are, so it's much more of like, I want you to write this outside of your normal assignment.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
These are things that are outside your normal assignment where we say, okay, we want you to
do X, Y, and
to
Z.
Do X, Y, and Z.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you could do work over the summer, Sherry, something like that. Instead of teaching a class, you could be developing something.
You could be, yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, it goes without saying that universities are odd creatures, because in every other workplace that I know of, any work that you do while you are employed belongs to your employer. Universities make distinction. There's a university exception to that. So,
actually, I have one more question. For instance,
sure.
with the line 73, with the royalty free, irrevocable, non-exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
So, will, in your proposal, would the university still attribute the original author? For instance, like if I develop a course, I leave, EME 2040, you know, this material was adapted from John Rabel, because you still have to recognize kind of the original author of that material.
I think that that's sort of fact specific.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you've left last year and were taking your course exactly,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we would. But if you've left 10 years ago and we've made adaptations to it and so forth,
mm-hmm.
we might or might not at
okay.
that point. Because at that point, it's become more.
Okay.
Out, you know. And people leave. It's hard to keep track.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So I'm looking on lines 85 to 87.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a feeling for how often grants and contracts specifically have language that might contradict what we have, what you're proposing here? I'm just concerned about...
Actually, I have an example, Jim.
Okay, do you have an example? Yeah.
For instance, I got my colleagues and I received an award from the state to help with the creation of open educational resources. And a condition of the award from the state is the resources must be licensed and as Creative Commons,
mm-hmm.
Creative Commons by. So that's a condition of the granting agency, that those materials, unfortunately, cannot be claimed by the university, because
right.
they have to. They come. The funding comes with tags.
Yeah, I don't think that it's.
So do we need
hugely
to have a clause in there, like unless
specified by the granting agency,
the granting and contract agency. Because I know a lot of the federal agencies now are moving toward that model as
mm-hmm.
as much as they can.
Yeah, it's either federal stuff has to be in the public domain or specific foundations or agencies would dictate how that those materials are being released.
We can certainly look at that.
Okay, I was just wondering if you had a feeling.
I don't.
How often?
I mean, this has been vetted by all the research attorneys and you know, multiple versions of it. So I don't know. They didn't express that this was a huge concern on their part, that this
mm-hmm.
happened a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can certainly go back and inquire and see if there's they want to make a change to that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions from our team?
Mm-hmm. Good job.
Actually, let's take another, like, a 15-minute coffee.
Sure, sure.
Because we have a lot of faculty out here, and they may have something that they can
This is a complicated
yeah,
piece of work.
And better to hear it now, and,
mm-hmm.
yeah, yeah.
and then we can take advantage of the expertise while we have it.
I asked her if she would take a look.
Did you
do so much stuff?
So, Sherry, like 11:45? Sound good?
I know it's only seasonal.
Yeah, you know, they close that until
about now.
November 1st or something.
Yeah.
Good. Because we do it. We give that.
Yeah, Ring to Rib is doable if you have a stopover at Fannin Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be kind of tough otherwise. Mm-hmm. Especially coming from here.
Oh,
the elevation change.
Come on. I just am trying to send something that's not going. I guess this room isn't very conducive.
May have to turn off the Wi-Fi and just go off of your cell service. Because I know the Wi-Fi has been spotty in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right, so the numbers are
going
to work.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Are we back on?
Yep.
We're back on, I think.
You have all your teams here?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. We lost some people. Okay.
How did we leave?
I think we left at the
inventions and works.
Yeah.
And then we were about to.
Yeah, we were
you
about
were
going to
put
yeah.
some stuff down.
Yeah.
So.
Okay,
yep.
good.
Yeah, we have yeah. one more ready for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, good.
We have all.
Yep.
Okay, so we've got Article 9, which is the assignment of responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
our proposal for you.
Okay.
And so this is an article where the Blue Book had lots of things that were missing. And so there will be some new material in there, and then there'll be some pages of deletions in the end. So this is a fairly big stack of stuff. I think the color and the black and white copies are equally good.
John, can I get one more?
Oh, he just.
Oh.
Just not.
So last This one finally makes it out, huh, John?
Yep, mm-hmm. finally got it done.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, can you slide one over my way?
Yeah, so wait a minute. This is all... Okay, you just made a whole bunch of copies of it.
Yeah, yeah.
This one's the blue.
That's the blue.
I have the blue, but I just wanted to get a couple.
I think they're all in color, right? Or did you have
to? No, someone in gray.
Okay.
There you go.
Hey, John, can I grab him?
Thanks. Okay, so let's see.
One's color, so I'm deciding to keep it awkward. Do I need one?
Yeah.
Is it official legible?
Yeah.
Sure. If you have an extra one, I'd love a copy in color. It's not critical, but because I'll get his copy when he's done. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
I got one. Thank you. So this is also five.
All right, so changes that we're proposing for Article 9. We're proposing to strike the material that's in 9.1D on lines 19 to 24, but to pick up or to add some language that says exactly what's meant by an unreasonable assignment. And they'll be coming later. And then part F, making commitments from the university to a faculty member regarding the assignment subject to enforcement of the grievance procedure. And so doing that then allows us to strike the entirety of the ADR process. And so that's on page is 11 to the end. So that whole entire section we're proposing to strike, as well as the section in front of it about instructional technology, which probably is blue book language from back in the day when IT was just getting started, but now this has become so integrated in everything we do that it just seems like we don't need that section at all. It's just second nature at this point. So in terms of, so moving on to page 3 then, under the annual assignment, in terms of communicating the assignment, and some of this language probably will be familiar to Mike since it came from either UF or FAMU at different points in here, having the assignments go out earlier by May 1st so that folks know, you know, during their normal academic year, what their expectation is, and then to have that finalized no later than 6 weeks before the start date of each term. And that gives faculty enough time to make changes in their courses, you know, and to, you know, if they have to shift to an entirely different course to get materials prepared and you know, field trips scheduled and speakers aligned and all that sort of thing. In line 110, we've got an important addition there. Is that in addition to the course assignment being communicated, its enrollment capacity also being included? Because that, of course, changes how courses will be taught. You know, as courses get larger, it becomes more and more difficult and eventually unfeasible to do things like hand grade, you know, hundreds of exams and things like that. And so faculty need to have time to get their courses aligned with the number of students that will end up in those courses. In And then in 9.4, what we're proposing is to have language about workload and for calculating what the FTE requirements are for different sorts of courses. So having them be specified if they're undergraduate, which is on lines 131 to 133, a graduate course, combined courses that are both graduate and undergraduate in the same place but with different expectations and different syllabi and things like that. And then that's all provided in a table, because right now we've got these broad disparities across units about what constitutes a full load, and then there are inequities even within departments a lot of times about what constitutes a full load. So it's done in a very helter-skelter way. In Part E, which is on page 5, section 149 to 152, including other instructional efforts that take place outside of a formal classroom setting, so supervision of theses and dissertation and internships and clinical activities also being included in there. Academic advisement, because some folks have hundreds of academic advisees. And then also looking at the effect of workload on the FTEs. And so we wanted to share with you some data we've got. Call it handout number one.
Sure.
That's fine. We'll just title it that way.
Okay.
So what this handout has in it is the academic ranking of world universities from what's commonly known as the Shanghai Index, and we've presented this before. It's an index that tracks pretty heavily emphasis on the STEM disciplines, more so than the others. But it has a long history, and it's not particularly being used to sell magazines or websites or things like that. And so one of the things you can see is that about the time that bargaining went local in 2003, UCF was rated around number 400. Then we had this pretty nice climb up to where we broached the top 300 in the world. And from 2010 to 2013, kind of stabilized just above 300. And then we had this drop that went down to 216, and now we're kind of recovering back up on there. Just for comparison, some of the other state universities, you know, FIU started about where we were, dropped off the survey for quite a while, and they've resurrected themselves and are around 425 or so. Florida State has had, they were roughly at equilibrium for a while until maybe 2009, and then they've started a slow decline, and there's a little evidence they may be pulling themselves out of that. USF was kind of the opposite of FSU. It had a pretty steady, slow increase to where its reputation actually was higher than that of FSU. And then they've dipped in just the last couple of years. And then, of course, UF, down in the lower left there, they're on a totally different scale. So their numbers are just within the top 100. And you can see that they went through quite a big slump, actually, you know, from being number 51 down to number 90, and they've sort of kicked out again. a little bit at the end. But one of the things that you notice is if you look at the student to faculty ratios, that there are some real patterns in here. So for example, UF, the student to faculty ratio is 19. They're the highest ranked of the ones on in this group that are ranked at all. And then FSU is at 22, USF right near them at 23, and we're at 30 with FIU being at 27. So our 30-to-1 faculty to student ratio, according to the Open Education Database, is tied for next to last. The only one that's worse is UF's online program at 35-to-1. So faculty have had a really heavy workload. And a lot of times the workload that's been expected of them has changed at the last minute. You know, we've had these big increases in class sizes and stuff, oftentimes with very little warning. And faculty have done, you know, a yeoman's effort on dealing with that, but at the same time they've sort of gotten to the point where they're saying, look, you know, we're doing the work of three mules and they're breaking down. And so we need to start taking a look at how we make those assignments, again, more predictable, more fair, more equitable, but also so that they service our students better. Because especially if you were looking at UCF as a stock, it has not been returning value for its investors in the last few years. And in part, it's a system-wide problem, but some places clearly have done a little bit better. USF in particular has done a little bit better at that than the others. So one of the things we did is we polled faculty towards the end of last semester. So it wasn't the last week, but it was towards the end. So I guess this will be exhibit two, Charlie. Or what do you call it? Handout two, sorry. Not exhibit, handout. Forgot where I was for a minute.
You want to call this episode on the screen?
Yeah. Do you have it?
Yeah, it's on the. There's a folder on the desktop here, John. Mm-hmm. So we asked folks just in the week before the poll how many total hours did they work for UCF, including grading and course design, travel, and all that sort of stuff. So that's what's on the x-axis. It was just that immediate past week, with the idea being that folks will remember how much they worked that previous week. And then what's on the vertical y-axis is on average how much do they work at UCF each week. And you can see that there's a few exceptions, but there's this really narrow ellipse. And so there are some folks who are working 100 to 120 hours that prior week, and they've been pretty consistently doing that the whole semester.
What week was this?
This was about a week or two before the end of the semester.
So
I'd have to look up.
Finals weeks when you're getting ready for finals?
Okay. No, it was before that.
Okay.
And so the red line is just, here's the average number of hours that they work across the semester. And it turns out that's about 52 and a half.
You logged
out. Oh, I logged out.
Yeah.
Oh, the red line is going to show on the gray copy. So now we can actually see a red line. That's good. That's better. So the red line is the average number of hours that faculty work every week that they reported. So it's about 52 and a half, more or less. And so it's about 12 hours more a week than what the contract specifies as the expectation for the minimal amount. But when you start to add that up, you say, okay, on a 9-month contract at 12 and a half hours added value per week, that adds up to a month and a half worth of extra work. And so over 12 months, if the person has a full contract in the summer, that's over 2 months. So faculty are working really hard. They're putting in a lot of hours. And I know, you know, from being in my building and my discipline, that there are plenty of people who are up in the 80, 90, 100 hours per week at different points in time. And so having that taken into account in the workload and in determining the assignments and then the courses is going to be something that's going to become more and more important, especially with these larger courses. So at the same time, you know, faculty do what they do because they love it, right? And they'd like to be able to do more of it. And I think it's in everybody's best interest, including our students and everybody, that we can be as efficient as we can doing it. So if you want to go over, we'll just skip over to 9.6, which is on page 6.
So you don't have a handout for this? Or do we? This one?
Yeah, that's the one that's coming around.
Oh, okay. Handout.
No, we didn't. The next couple, we don't have a handout for. We revised them at the last minute. But I'll give you copies of it.
Okay.
But this one is the top half. So these, or no, yeah. Let's look at the top half first, John, sorry. So what's showing on the top there is just how many courses a year faculty reported themselves teaching. So this is for the whole year, not just part of it. So it ranged from 0 up to 10. And the really interesting thing is the vertical y-axis is how many office hours they hold. And you might think that, well, someone who teaches more courses would have more students, you know, students times courses, and they might need to have more work or more office hours to accommodate questions and review sessions and whatnot. But that's not true. It turns out that it's just a flat line. And even if you try to fit what looks like a hump in the middle there, it's not a significant fit. There's nothing really there. It's your eye playing tricks on you. And so it turns out that the average number of office hours, if you go down a little bit there, John, is about 7.5, more or less.
7.7.
Yeah, 7.71. So faculty are taking a substantial amount of their time for office hours, but then we ask them, okay, what fraction of the time do students actually come to your office hours? And that's what's on the bottom or the larger scale handout. The average in terms of the median is a quarter of the time, 25% of the time. So it's 75% inefficient. There's time that faculty are spending waiting for no one to come. And we know that no one's coming. And so, you know, at first you say, well, you'll do something else in your office, which is true. That's what faculty do. But it also ties up our ability to go to meetings and things. So when faculty, you know, get a doodle poll, okay, we have to have a meeting for some reason, please indicate the times that you're free. Well, if they have office hours, they're indicating they're not free. And so then you either get those faculty not being able to participate or it constrains the times. And so in our office hour proposal, we're proposing that all employees have an average of 1 office hour per week for each course they teach where they're the instructor of record. And that additional office hours could be scheduled by appointment. So that's flexibility to meet student needs and things like that. And then that the office hours should be scheduled to accommodate demand
because we know when students are going to come, right? They're going to come right before exams. They're going to come during advising, which is a critical time for them. And there may be other times that faculty are pretty well aware of. So that's why on line 191, we're suggesting having an average of one office hour, but put the effort where it needs to be at the times of peak demand. Because in reality, we're addressing student questions a lot by email. I mean, it's not the 1950s anymore. I mean, we've got all these different forms of communication. And so we should take advantage of those. And that's in part why in part C, we've got that faculty who are teaching classes in one of the online modes can hold their office hours online, because that's where students expect to see them, right? If they're taking an online course, they may not physically be anywhere near campus. Why would they come to your campus office hours? So we wanted you to see that survey data, and it's pretty remarkable when we started asking faculty, you know, okay, how many office hours did you hold? And the numbers are all over depending on what college they're in. But then when we asked them, okay, how many students came to see you last week? We get the same answer over and over again. None. Okay, well, what fraction of the time do they actually come? A quarter, a third? You know, you never hear more than a half. And then you start asking, when do they come? Before the exams, during advising period. So it's really predictable. And then most any other business model, you would structure your capacity to match up with your demand. But we're not doing that across all our disciplines. Some colleges and some departments are doing it, and others are just saying you have to have X number of hours all the time for no apparent reason. So this is where we could enhance faculty productivity and hopefully, you know, align it at the same time to accomplish objectives. Let's see. Okay, yeah, just flip to the next one. So here's part of the rationale for having the FTEs calculated in there and trying to get some predictability and equitability in the assignments, and to also recognize that folks who are teaching larger courses have these tremendous demands that are placed on them. So when you've got a small class, you can obviously do more mentoring directly. It's better for the students. But those little unforeseen things that happen to students along the way are, you know, their probabilities in small classes, their certainties in larger classes, and then they happen multiple times in the really big classes.
Can you scroll up? There's a line that I can't read.
Thank you. So this one was really interesting. So what we did is we asked faculty, for your largest class, so these data only include the largest class that someone taught. It's not across all classes, just the large classes. What do you feel is the ideal number of students that you should have in your face-to-face class? And so that's what's on that blue line. And so that's what's on the x-axis. The blue line shows where the actual number of students that you've taught, which is what's on the vertical or y-axis there, matches the faculty member's expectation for the number that ought to be in there. And what the dots being all up above that blue line indicates is that we have way more students in our classes than faculty feel are ideal. And for these face-to-face courses, the baseline is 43 students more. That's where you start off with. And then for larger courses, that number goes up. And so I think if we take a look at this, it really provides guidance for where the largest class sizes should be and where we can better serve our students, and also where we should start directing additional resources like teaching assistants and others, other help into the classroom so we can help our students succeed. Because when you're starting off where your baseline is 43 more students than faculty feel they should have, 43 students is a class all by itself. You know, a lot of universities, that's about the biggest class they ever teach at teaching colleges. So that's That's for face-to-face. When you look at online, I think that's the next one, right?
Yes.
You still see the same pattern there. And this was a little bit surprising. The baseline's not quite as much, but even for online, the faculty feel that we're starting off our courses without 30 more than we should have. And then as the course gets larger, that also goes up because the slopes are going to be higher. They're above that one-to-one line. So that was a little bit surprising. It's you're still getting that same reaction, even for the online courses, where you might think that numbers don't quite matter as much. But they do, because you have a lot of interaction with students, right, in the online realm. It's just not face-to-face. It's more diffuse one-on-one. So it takes a lot of time. And, of course, setting those up takes time. And then we asked this similar questions for graduate courses. And so here the answer was a little bit more straightforward. And face-to-face, the ratio of the actual number in class to the ideal number, the actual numbers were about 55% larger than what faculty felt were ideal class sizes just all the way across the board. And I'll give Charlie a copy of these. I apologize for not.
No, that's okay, actually.
A lot of
it's easier to read when it's right in front of me. So
oh, okay.
And it saves paper. So
yeah, it
I'd actually prefer to take a picture rather than to have copies. Thank you, Dulce.
You know, and you can see that we're teaching some pretty big graduate courses. You know, we're starting to get above 20 or so. That's a pretty big graduate course. And then if we go down to the last one, when you look at the online courses, you know, there's far fewer dots, right, because we have fewer faculty teaching online graduate courses. But here the answer was really different. It's just that there are about 8.5 more students than there should be in the ideal class across the board. It didn't matter what the size of the class was. So the slope was 1-to-1. It had the exact same slope as that blue line. But you can imagine that blue line, just take it with your eye and shift it into the middle of that cloud and then see where it hits the intercept, and it's 8.5. So it's a parallel line, but it's 8.5 students more. And these are UCF faculty, you know, expressing these opinions. And so these are faculty who came to a big university, being comfortable in a big university. They've got that as their background. And so they already, you know, this pool already has a perception of what large courses are like that are probably quite different from the rest of the country because our student faculty ratio starts off so high to begin with. So there's some real issues with workload. We've got too many students in our class. It's making life difficult for the faculty, which is who UFF represents directly, but it's also not good for our students. And so it's going to hurt our students' experiences, which then tanks our reputation, you know, and then that hurts our alumni. And so it's a negative feedback loop. We've got to get out of negative feedback loops.
Okay. Get all that. Does anybody have any questions about any of these?
So we know that, you know, there's some new elements in here and that you'll want to look at them,
yep,
you know, closely and think about different assignments. But part of the reason why we're so slow getting this to you is that we have a diverse faculty and lots of different members that we represent, and trying to get language that would encompass almost all of them and have wiggle room for when we needed to have wiggle room, and also not to make us totally upset the apple cart. So, you know, the normal assignments that folks are getting in different units are easily accommodated within that table. This is just making sure that folks aren't that those assignments are being made equitably and rationally and have some justification, and that faculty who are being tasked with doing things, especially at the last minute, or that involve a lot of work, like changing the modality of their course or accommodating 100 or 150 new students, that they've been given time in their work week to get that done.
because folks really are getting, they're stretched. They're getting their way.
All right, does anybody have any questions about Article 9? I think we have to read through it.
Yeah,
John?
We expect.
I would anticipate that we'd have some questions as a result of our review of it. Maybe we should take a caucus? Or
do you have anything to give us while you're caucusing?
Not beyond what we gave
you
today.
We've got everything on the table.
We just don't know what's changed.
Yeah, so we'll get that to you.
I thought you went over a lot of this before I got here.
We did, but John asked if we could have like a list of the changes between what we put on the table before and what's in what we give them to. Because we did a legislative format from status quo, not from the last proposal. All right, well, we'll be, give us those few minutes.
Yeah. 12:30 now. Can you give us a time frame? We might order lunch while you're.
Yeah, we were thinking the same thing.
Okay.
So,
maybe half an hour?
Oh, no. By the time we order and get it, you're talking about eating. You want to eat.
We can eat here.
Here?
We're going to.
Yeah,
yeah, we'll just order stuff.
Yeah.
And eat while we talk?
Mm-hmm. No.
We're good.
I'm okay. You want
I mean, you're sort of the rate limiting step. I mean, you're going to need time to arrive at Charleston, but he left all his property and things to university. He had a separate studio because he was worried that the original plantation house had burned down. He built a much more modest brick house, but his studio was separate, air conditioned and temperature controlled, because he was worried about a fire in there.
Yeah.
So they brought me in to look at the specimens and things and evaluate them. Are they worth anything?
Okay, we didn't talk about it.
Well, we had an opportunity in caucus to go through 9, and obviously there's some aspects of this proposal that we've not seen before or considered before or have had the opportunity to have. So we're going to have to respond next time we meet.
Understood. Were there any questions we could address just off the
did
top?
Did any questions? I don't think we did.
Let me look. There might have been something. There's something in here that I marked that I wanted to. Oh, just a quirky thing, but the paid holidays.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got Independence Day and Memorial Day, which that works fine for 12-month employees, but 9-month employees aren't working on those days anyway. So are we going to be paying you for days when you're not working?
Oh, no, that wasn't the intent. The normal contract, yeah. Same.
Mm-hmm. I assumed that
before.
To be the case, but
yeah, no,
I thought, we check.
If an employee has an assignment.
Yes.
During
yeah.
that time.
Yeah, that's right. 9 months would
because I thought, well, that's a pretty good gig. Okay.
Now, if you'd like to offer that, we'll consider it.
I'm trying to think if there's some way as a 12-month employee I could figure out to take advantage of some of that, but so far I'm not finding it.
You got to join our unit. And form your own unit.
Okay, anybody mention something about 23?
Yeah, just one thing we wanted to point out in the full book offer that we made, we did make a change in 23, which I think you might have already picked up, but we wanted to bring your attention to it. That is, there's an increase in our salary offer, and that is found. It's will be
page
64 or 63 on 67, one of them.
67, I think.
67.
It depends, I guess, on whether you're looking at the legislative version or not.
Well,
but it, but it, if you're not looking at the legislative version, 54 or 63, and it says 23.3 across the board increases, November 16, 2018, distributed on pay 12/7/2018, or January 11, 2019. But for the 2018-19 year, each eligible employee shall receive a 2% increase to the employee's base salary. So the offer now is a 2% across the board, which is up from our last.
It is still below even the inflation rate.
On line, on about the one-time payment, mm-hmm. I see that there's two different calculations. Of course, when the offer or when it would take effect. How was that calculated? Was it
same way as last year?
Same way as last year. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is right now, you know, we've got a board of trustees meet. You know, if we agreed on this today, which obviously we're not going to, but you would have to ratify, and then the board would have to ratify, and then we'd have to hit the pay period, so there's no way we can do it. I mean, these are the two pay periods in between now and, you know.
Yeah, understood.
We've
been
through
this. Look at our calendars before. Yeah.
Do the calendar thing. It's always a challenge.
Speaking of ratification, did the board ever ratify the
that's on the agenda for the Labor Committee this week, yeah.
Okay. The Labor Committee or the full
board? Well, the Labor Committee, I will present to the Labor Committee in the morning, and with barring some unforeseen catastrophe. They will approve it, and hopefully it'll just go on the consent agenda for the full board in the afternoon.
Okay.
And that's the committees look at the substantive stuff, and then if it's something like that they can just approve and
do the afternoon,
just make a consent item.
Good.
That would be good. I had a question, John. In your proposal, did you address... We proposed a new article about study abroad, summer appointments, so on and so forth. We kind of separated that out from Article 8. Is that addressed in your proposal?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you know where it's?
Well,
where
it's where it was before for us for our proposal.
Yeah, we've split them. We split it as well, but in a different way than you did. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I see page 6.
Mm-hmm. So,
I see you moved it to. It's in appointment. Right? I can't remember if it's moved or not.
Where should I put it?
I know.
Probably
we've moved, so much stuff around and made so many numbering changes. And
put it over there next to the giraffe's head.
Who knows what the heck we've got? Put it over there next to the what?
Giraffe's head.
Giraffe's head. Okay.
I wish I'd gotten the tuna fish today. They all just felt like that. Or the vegetarian.
Yeah. Well, we did the Einstein, so maybe that was a little bit quicker.
Well, now I'll have to look and see it.
Some
of this might be kind of
the
old
trick
news.
Is when you have the first caucus to do your put your order in at the first caucus, and then it's ready when you get to the.
We weren't quite that quick.
Barron is up on these things, you know. I didn't hear about it. The Jimmy Jones boycott.
Oh.
Well, I'm afraid that's all we have for you guys today.
Well, we're only half an hour away from our end time, so I think we got a lot of stuff on the table anyway.
No, we've got a lot, and I mean, we'd like to next time respond as much what you presented as we can. So I hate to ask, but the faster we can get,
we'll get that chart out to you.
The highlight reel.
Yeah, we will.
And focus on things. Yeah.
We have some,
John,
some information.
John, just so you know, when you do a compare, I'm going to have to take the last proposal, accept all the changes, and then compare it to the one that's here. So it's not as obvious what all the changes are as this. The one I gave you is from status quo. I will do what you asked, but it's maybe won't be.
No, that's fine, Charlie, because then mostly I'm concerned about is what was changed from your last proposals. So
So
yeah, okay,
so
that's
if you
what you're
accept
looking
all
at.
Those, then we can find them.
I just so you understand, I'm not
yeah.
trying to do
oh,
any,
no.
put anything underneath the, you know, I'm
no, no,
doing
no.
things straight. I just, it'll just look funny to another person if they were looking at it. They're going, no, we didn't accept all these changes, but I have to in order to do the compare.
Mm-hmm. We kind of know our own funny business here,
yeah.
so
yeah,
we're used to it now.
All right, everybody, thanks.
Yellow
thank
and
you.
Gray
see
and
you next time.
Yeah,
see you October 30th.
Track
right?
from your version.
See you October 30th.
30th. Yep.
Okay,
yep.
see you soon.
Right before Halloween.
Day before Halloween, yeah.
We can all come in costume.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
Everyone promises their favorite present.
Yay.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Did you set up your did you set up your
Yes. Hi, Joe. See you back at the ranch.
See you there.